Thanks for joining us. This is Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. We continue our mission on trying to explore some international companies that have an extremely entrenched businesses in the country as well as beyond. Joining me in the studio is Daniel Abbo, the Vice President Market Leader Asia Pacific of Philips Domestic Appliances. Daniel, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. Malaysia is, of course, a key market for Philips Domestic Appliances, but of course, coming to Kuala Lumpur is also quite important for you. And thank you for taking the time to come to Bukit Jalil and grace us with some of your presence and share some of your ideas. Let's do a quick stock take into the whole idea of this being a 130-plus-year-old company. It's a household name. A lot of us have, must know Philips to some degree. Because of the new shareholder setup that Philips is going through right now, there's a lot of challenges and a lot of interesting ideas that you guys can navigate and perhaps share with us some of those ideas. So my first question to you is this. Could you share with us a little bit more about the background of Philips and how are things looking like with the new ownership?
Yes. Thank you very much, and first of all, thank you for having me here. Very excited to be to join you today as I learn about the region and I have my first visit to Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. Talking a bit about the company and the brand. The brand is an entity known for more than 130 years. It's a brand that was started in the Netherlands, as many people know, by the Philips family wanting to do a light bulbs business. And the company, through its time, has grown to a massive conglomerate that at some point in time was making even satellite and components for aerospace industries. But through time, also as the industry has changed, has decided to focus on a health tech business. And as part of that refocusing of the company, we got separated from the company a year ago. So Philips Domestic Appliances is today a separate company from what is called Royal Philips, which is still the owner of the brand. So yes, we have a brand that is well known across many households. Either people have a TV or a light bulb or any other device they might have bought from us in the past. And that they will continue having from us in the space of domestic appliances. Now, as a new company, Philips Domestic Appliances is a smaller entity, where Royal Philips used to be, 130,000 plus employees. We are 7,500 employees, still covering all the key geographies. We're present directly in 55 countries. We have R&D centers in every continent. And Asia Pacific, Malaysia, as a specific country, is a very important region for us in terms of growth. Now, as you well know, we have a new owner, Hill House Capital. They have a very big ambition in terms of growth for us, and that is really helping us to say, okay, what are the things that we need to do over the coming years, looking at the Asia Pacific region to deliver on that growth. And one of the things that I like is that they really focus on growth. That's what they're asking for, instead of the role that we used to play in the previous conglomerate, where it was really generate cash that the company can reinvest into other areas. This is really what we generate will be reinvested in growth.
So that means you're going to spend a lot more in R&D, you're going to spend a lot more in product testing, product development as well.
In advertisement? Yeah.
Oh, okay. So let's talk about that. So this is a very typical business in terms of trying to grow market share in terms of the consumer ad space, I suppose. What would be some of the ideas that you can share with us in terms of your advertising play?
Well, what you see, and particularly with the pandemic, we see it a lot, is the way consumers are shopping today and consuming media has changed a lot. You're also part of the space. And what we see is a big shift into digital. We have also very big players like Shopee or Lazada that have become media institutions in themselves. And that's where we need to refocus our advertisement money into. And also the play, the role of advertisement, but also the role of the offline world as part of that advertisement. We tended to look at offline as, or brick and mortar shops as the place where we sell, but today that plays a role in the way people experience the brand. To give you an example, in some of the countries where we do business, Korea, when you go to a department store, if you want to look at a full automated coffee machines, that we also have them here, the machine that you're seeing, maybe you will not buy it at that moment, but it's part of experiencing the machine. How does the coffee taste like? How do you use it? That is what we need to consider. And in that sense, the omnichannel or the brick and mortar store also plays a role in the journey And as such, we can also look at it as part of the advertisement. How do people get in touch with the brand? How do people get to experience our products?
Also, market to market, the experiential exposure is a little bit different. Culture bears a lot of differences.
Oh, yes.
So how do you jive with the ubiquitous offering that you offer across the markets with the different cultures that you operate in?
Well, there are two things. First, we need to tailor our offering. There are markets, just to give you an example on coffee, there are markets where the full automatic coffee machine is a lot developed, is very, very developed, penetration figures into the high single, low double digit when you look at the households. Mm. And there are other markets where full automatic coffee machines are just not existent at all. To give you an example, Vietnam, where I was last week. Mm. So that is part of the thing that we need to do, which is offer the portfolio. And the other thing is then tailor the message to what is really relevant. One of the biggest parts of our portfolio where we expect most of the growth is our kitchen appliances portfolio. But food is very different region to region. Mm. Where a Malaysian household, and then there are parts of Malaysia that also cook different, is going to be very different to what an Indonesian household is, to what a Korean or a Vietnamese. So what we're doing in kitchen appliances and in our advertisement is also make sure that we make the devices such that you can cook the locally relevant recipes in it. We have literally a staff of chefs spread around the region that look at the key staples and at the key dishes that are coming up in the trends and say, okay, how do I cook this in an air fryer, in a rice cooker, or in some of the devices that we have coming up? And then we compile that recipe, and that recipe gets uploaded into an app that we have that is called NutriU. Mm. And the idea is that NutriU as an app becomes that one-stop shop that it doesn't matter where in the world you are and what is the type of food that you're looking for, you can find it there. And as we connect more of our devices into the app will literally operate the device for you, will adjust the settings, will tell you when to do each of the steps, so you can get that specific rendang that you like on your chicken the way you like it.
But of course, this is a native app that belongs to Philips Domestic Appliances. But what about the selling point? Do you still see a greater value in terms of improving your shop, your online front store at these many e-commerce sites?
Yes, for sure. There is a lot more that we can do. We need to invest in getting more visibility. That's the first thing. And I go back to the role that we were playing previously. The role that we were playing under Royal Philips was a role of generating cash and profit that could be reinvested into other parts of the corporation. Now our role is for growth. Mm. So our strategy is to make sure that we increase our visibility, that we are present. We also operate in a region that has very big promotion days, 9-9, 11-11, just to mention a couple. Mm. And these are the things that we are investing disproportionately to get visibility with the right message, with the right products, and then make sure that that brings us up in the consumer journey, that we're visible and people can choose us. The other thing that we're also investing a lot is on key opinion leaders across the region to make sure.
I was about to ask you that, yeah.
Yeah, because ultimately people are getting the reviews differently. In the past, in the marketing world where I grew up, it was all called word of mouth. Mm. But now word of mouth has a different flavor to it, which is through online influencers, where people follow certain people, whether it's about a healthy lifestyle or a tastier way of cooking. And that is what we're doing today. We are connecting to some of these influencers and we're saying, hey, try your product, try your propositions, and then if you see that they match what you like and what you like to show to our audience, we would like to be part of the journey.
Some brands that deal with KOLs feel that it is a double-edged sword, particularly when you see KOLs that are very influential, that would rather go with the raw kind of a real life experience kind of thing. How do you see this approach? Do you feel it is a double-edged sword, like other brands I speak to?
For sure it is a double-edged sword. I think we've also had experience in the company where we picked a key influencer in another market. We had a huge business and then she was found guilty of tax evasion by the local authorities and fine. So that is quite brutal, because then you happen to be a brand associated to that. And it also affects your business directly, because then overnight their whole income revenue stream disappears. Yeah. So it is a double-edged sword, but the reality is that we see that that's where our consumers are. Ultimately, the way of winning in a market, and that's the marketing school I come from, is you go where the consumer is. You have to stay relevant. If that's where some consumers are, we will assess the brand fit with the KOLs. Some KOLs have certain brand equities that don't fit very well with a household brand name like we are. They might be too edgy, or they might not be edgy enough for the brand that we also want to be. Because one of the challenges that we have as a brand is that when we do research across the region, we are still perceived as a very strong brand, but it's still my mother and my grandmother's brand. And we need to reach to a younger generation. And that will imply taking risk.
Some research or consumer research houses have published two that I find rather contradictory information. But you know, it's worth having a debate on. On one hand, people are spending less and less amount of time per video on digital media, either on TikTok or IG. You know, the range is from 7 seconds to 15 seconds. So you can imagine the kind of speed that you need in terms of trying to impress upon them in the first 5 seconds, perhaps. And then the contradictory point that I want to point out is people spend a lot more time in experiential, real-world settings. So they linger at the store, trying to spend more time with the devices they want to be with. I mean, I'm not just talking about electronic devices. We're talking about fabric, textile, you name it. So where do you see the first of all, do you kind of agree with the kind of research that comes out of this? People spend more time in real-life store, and attention is getting shorter.
That we are seeing. One of the things that we also see, look, and the pandemic has affected us all. If there is one thing that over the last 2 years has been really a global experience, it doesn't matter where in the world you were, has been the pandemic. The pandemic has affected us all in ways that it will still take years for us to unpack and understand the details. But one of the things that we clearly see across the region and beyond the Asia Pacific region is that now that people can go out, they really want to go out. After being locked for 2 years inside of your home, interacting with work through a 13-inch screen, people want to go out. We are social animals. We were not evolved, created to be confined in these narrow spaces. We develop societies from interacting and trusting and experiencing and communicating with each other. So now what we do see is indeed people are going out. And that's one of the big shifts that we have to do as a company. Over the last 2 years, it was relatively easy, although very painful, to cut a lot of the spending in brick and mortar and in real life to move to digital. And now we have to rebalance that, because what we see is that we see people wanting to go to department stores to hey, how does that taste? Let me taste that, because taste, smell, is not something that you can communicate through a digital environment.
But this ties in with what you said earlier. People don't make purchases then. They might make the purchase decision then, but the ability to take out their wallet and then pay for it right then doesn't necessarily happen.
What you see is that the journey has also changed. One of the things that we saw, particularly in the middle of the pandemic when I was managing the garment care business, is that we expected people will start buying less expensive devices. And that didn't happen immediately. What we saw is that people were actually, because they were not under the pressure to buy, they didn't feel the pressure
actually,
to buy.
Actually, that's the word, feel under the pressure.
They didn't.
As a salesperson here.
But also, look, if you need to show up for work tomorrow and your iron broke down, you need an iron now. But if you're not going back to the office in 3 weeks, then you have 3 weeks to consider what iron you want to have. Is this the right iron for me? Are there better options? You're also not going out to eat, so suddenly you have disposable income that you can distribute differently. So this has altered the way people want to make their purchase decisions. And we do see that for some expensive devices, people are taking longer. And they say, yeah, I went to the department store, I got informed, I'll go online, I'll buy it online, so I get it delivered at home. That is also what we see. They don't buy it then and there. They want the convenience of online, but they want to be able to experience it in the real world. And that is the beauty of the new consumer decision journey that we're seeing.
Are you willing to share, or how do you segment your market? Is it still a thing for marketeers to do, to segment the consumer market?
It's an old habit that some marketeers move away from in the frenzy of digital. I'm old school, so that's one of the things that for me is super important. We need to segment the market. One of the most interesting models of segmentation that I've seen over the last couple of years is not necessarily segmenting by socioeconomic, but segmenting by journey. Where in your lifestyle and in your life stage are you? So what you see is that, for example, the people that are coming out of university these days, the Gen Zs, the ones that are getting their first jobs, they have a certain set of attitudes and needs. Just to talk about garment care, which is a category that I'm familiar with, they are not looking for irons. they don't wear the same clothes that their parents were wearing at that age. They want a more flexible wardrobe. They use different types of fabrics. They combine them differently, a lot of synthetic. But once in a while, they have a garment that needs to be de-wrinkled. So a device that is becoming very popular with them are handheld steamers. A handheld steamer, you load it, you turn it on, and within a minute, you have steam. You de-wrinkle it, and it's good enough to go. It would not have passed their mothers, their parents, their grandparents' test about is it ironed well enough, but it's good enough for them. They look great. They feel great in those garments. So, but this cohort, when they move to the next stage in life, when they marry, when they have kids, they will need to establish a routine. And this is where we've seen millennials over the last 10, 15 years change, which is once you have kids, you kind of start establishing a routine. Your kid has to go to school every day. Your kid needs to be fed healthy food every day. And that anchors the family into a different routine. And then you start evaluating what type of devices do you need, because then you're going to be into a structure, into an organized way of managing your time while not having a lot of time. So then the propositions, the products that we have play a role in helping you save time and do things easier and healthy. And that is where targeting that consumer at that point in time with an air fryer, for example, becomes relevant, because now they are in the mood and now they are in the need for healthy. Later on, they will become, maybe they get a second child or a third child. That is the moment where suddenly having to iron becomes a different thing. Or you have multiple children, you have a bigger household if you can afford it, or crowded spaces. You need to manage the air quality of those spaces. So the segmentation through life stage allows us to say, well, what are the relevant propositions for each of them? Each of them will carry their own media segmentation, so to speak, and each of them have their own shopping habits. And that is where, as a company, we are going towards to reach them at the right stage with the right message.
One of the reasons why people segment using socioeconomic status or even psychographic status is because they marry the wallet with the products that you want to sell. How do you, it sounds like you're uncoupling.
Not necessarily uncoupling. Look, at the end, the economic reality is the economic reality. Yeah? We will sell the products to the people that can afford it. And also in the roadmap that my team and I have, we want to make the brand more affordable to a lot of consumers in the region.
Sorry, pardon me. I think the way I look at your segmentation by customer journey is relevancy more than anything.
It is.
I mean, wallet size is another thing.
Wallet size is another thing. So I'm not saying that the wallet size.
No matter what, whether I have money or not, the product that you push to me, it's like, I need it.
Exactly. But that is my point. So the economic and the social, the affordability will always be there. But I don't believe that's the primary criteria that we should be using.
Okay. So we're supposed to go on a break somewhere. Let's go for a break right now. This is a very enthralling conversation. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back. I have with me Daniel Abbo, the Vice President and Market Leader Asia Pacific of Philips Domestic Appliances. Let's look at the marketing element versus the segmentation and the other activities that you're doing. As we discussed before the break, we're talking about trying to get the most relevant messaging out to your consumers. How do you tie this up with the kind of media buy that you want, the kind of key opinion leaders that you are looking for, the kind of nuances that you're looking at, including calendaring some of the key holidays, for instance, or purchase decisions before Christmas, before Hari Raya or Eid or something like that? Do you see this as a you know, whitewater rafting moment where you go crazy, or everything's planned out already 12 months ahead?
Eventually, you want to get to the point where things are planned out 12 months ahead. But also, the 12 months ahead, it's a bit of a fantasy, because in reality is that the world is changing a lot faster than 12 months ahead. So the key word that we need to have is, to some degree, we need to get a lot more sophisticated in our tools. We are not there yet. It's a journey as a company that we're entering into. It's a journey that we're entering with our media partners, with our media agencies. We need to get a lot more sophisticated to then recognize that indeed there are different audiences out there. As I was describing, life stage is a way in which we can segment, and we are segmenting our audiences. Recognize that each of those audiences have a specific set of needs. They have a specific decision journey. we know that the shopper profile of somebody that buys, for example, at Shopee is slightly different from somebody that buys at Lazada. So that already carries with it two different realities on decision journeys and the type of products that we want to make visible. And also the message. I was talking before about Generation Zs. We have some early practices with Generation Zs that we are seeing that the way the media, not only the type of media we buy, but also the message needs to be different to that we use in previous generations. So we need to be really sophisticated and tailor the message. We will get into an 18-month planning. That's not where we are today, but that's the roadmap in which we are. And make that planning flexible enough so that we can adjust to world events. Because one of the things that we also see is that, for example, supply chain is getting very disruptive with what was already happening in the pandemics and the containers, with what is happening with the war in Ukraine and Russia. So we need to be flexible enough to say, well, maybe I'm not getting the product that I wanted for next month.
So what's the next best thing?
What's the next best thing? How do we shift? And that is the level of sophistication and flexibility that we need to get to, and we need our partners to get to. We're also changing supply chain partners in the region to make sure that we can also become a lot more flexible.
What about TikTok? Because we know for a fact that the ability for people to spend on TikTok is twice as much as they do on Instagram. However, the demography of TikTokers are Gen Z, who might not necessarily be having the kind of wallet size that might be productive for you in your marketing journey. Talk to us through what you think about TikTok.
So TikTok is a key channel when you look at the amount of people that are on it, when you look at the attention that they capture. And we see in several places that we see TikTok and social shopping as an element that is emerging.
Sorry, social shopping?
Being shopping associated to TikTok.
Okay.
So what we see is that it is an important channel, but it's something that we're treading carefully. Is something that is on our roadmap, and we will start experimenting with it now in Q4, and we will advance it into next year. But we're treading carefully there, because for us, it's not clear-cut that indeed the person that is there is willing to spend the money there. Consumers have also built certain shopping habits over the past years, already shifting into online, and there are very well-established and trusted partners in online.
What about the concept of live shopping? Is that something that you're looking at?
Live shopping, we are looking at it and we use it in many markets. Live shopping is actually one of the things that through the pandemic proved very, very strongly for us. We do it a lot in Thailand and we do it a lot in Korea.
So it's customs or it's a culture thing rather than a tested marketing channel?
I would say it is a tested marketing channel. It is a channel that when we see it coming up in a new market, we're willing to go full into it. Because we see the value, because what it allows the end user to do is to experience the product or experience the product through what they see is the experience of somebody else. And they can get the questions, they can see a lot of people asking questions, commenting, and they say, yeah, this looks like it's for me. I'm going to go and buy it. To some degree, it's what TV home shopping used to do in the 70s and the 80s.
It's the same thing, actually, you think about it. Yeah. I was growing up on this on TV. And if you buy now, plus there's more, that kind of thing, you know? We don't have much time left. But very quickly, what about macroeconomic situations? Right now, you were talking about the supply chain disruption. Inflation is going up in many countries, nearly all countries, to be frank. And people are now really thinking about how they distribute their wallet when it comes to domestic appliances. Do you feel that this is a considerable headwind for you to navigate your business against?
For sure, it is a considerable headwind. It changes the landscape. And what we are doing as a company, we're adjusting our roadmaps to make sure that our products are more affordable. That's the first thing that we need to do. We want to make sure that as a brand, we remain aspirational. Yeah. But an aspirational brand that doesn't enter into your household is also a brand that is not connecting with you.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure that we enable that connection by adjusting the price points that we have. And we're also shifting our priorities within segments to make sure that we have the right product in the right place.
But you have to be careful because price is a signal of quality. So even if you're selling good product at low price.
And we still want to continue building the Philips brand as a brand that people want to trust. So that is the challenge. But the good thing is that as we disentangle from Royal Philips, we brought all our engineers, and we have great engineering capabilities, and we have great partners for manufacturing across the region. So we have a lot of expertise in the region that also needs to be adjusted to this new reality.
Does this mean there's a diversification of brands in terms of the Philips household, in terms of, you know, an aspirational brand, affordable brand?
Not at this moment. Our commitment and the commitment that we have as a company is to the Philips brand. But the thing that we can continue to do is make sure that the brand represents great value and great quality. But we never said that the brand didn't need to be affordable. Again, I'll quote from Garment Care. We have one of our best sold products in the region is a dry iron. The model is HD1172, which is hugely popular. I mean, it's what an Indonesian lady will tell you is an iron. She will literally quote it by the type number. We've been selling this thing for more than 25 years. And it's one of the most affordable propositions that we have. It's just a great quality product. We don't need to move out of that. But the question is, how do we get to the equivalent of that in the other categories that we play? How do we guarantee that you get a great experience, that the product is relevant, and the quality? And that is the challenge that we like to take as a company.
It's unbelievable. But there's so much more that I need to ask you. But you know, you always leave the audience and myself perhaps for one thing. That was Daniel Abo, the Vice President and Market Leader of Asia Pacific or Philips Domestic Appliances. If you missed any part of this show, just head on to astrowin.com, look for Notepad. You can also look for Philips there as well. Until then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.